Thanks for tuning in to What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Brian John Mitchell, Kristen Isgett, and Bob Hinkle. Today, we're taking our cue from a listener suggestion that we visit the topic of artists' inner demons, and specifically a lot of the artists who have had mental illness or who have been disabled that makes them so notorious for that disability, for that mental illness, and whether that is some of the main reason why their star still shines.
Well, I think that there definitely is a sort of fascination with tragedy in pop culture that maybe keeps those stories going and keeps an interest alive. I also think, though, that there is sort of a marriage between darkness and creativity that can't be denied. And while it's not necessary to have one with the other or vice versa, there is a long tradition in music and the arts of depression and other mental illness and drug and alcohol abuse that is probably, I'm sure, fed by a lifestyle of fame and touring and creating and those kinds of things. But also, you know, there's a lot of self-medicating that goes on in creating art as well as in abusing self. And I think that sometimes those things, the lines get blurred and think those things can go hand in hand. And I also think there's a difference between, you know, the tabloid sensation kind of things and then, you know, people who maybe aren't alive today or relevant today, but they're still notorious today because of whatever their illness or story was at the time. You know, we were talking earlier about Phil Spector or Skip Spence, and you were talking about Syd Barrett. If you want to go into that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Syd Barrett, of course, everybody's, the main thing they know about him is he took too much LSD and went crazy, but unfortunately not captured in any of the studio recordings of Syd Barrett is how out there and a great improvisational guitar player he is. Maybe it's on YouTube at this point, I don't know, but you can see live footage of him freaking out to the level that Jimi Hendrix freaks out, you know, and he's that quality of an out there improvisational guitar player, but nobody knows him for that. And they know him for, oh, he's the guy that took too much LSD and went crazy. And, you know, there's, why is it even that, like, Jimi Hendrix is also known for the same thing that, but yet somehow he, through whatever magic, he's remembered at first and foremost as a great guitar player, not first and foremost as this guy that did all these drugs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it has to do with how you wear your clothes in a way. I have a Hendrix story, which I'm glad you mentioned. Long ago and far away, I was in a band that was, we were playing a gig in a small club in Cleveland, and it was just after Hendrix came back from England. Purple Haze had just broken. He was in the first flush of success. Was in the hotel lobby. I knew it was Hendrix because he was the only guy in the lobby with a 3-foot ostrich plume sticking out of the top of his hat. But I screwed up my courage and walked over to him and I said, you know, big fan, et cetera, et cetera. Got this band. We're playing at this club. We're doing, you know, doing a light set. When you get through, if you feel like coming down, come on down. And you know what he did? He came down to this little tiny rat-skeller kind of a club in this hotel, showed up about 1:30 in the morning, and his eyes, all I can tell you was there was an awful lot going on behind those eyes. They were ablaze. Mental illness? I don't know. What had he ingested something? I don't know. All I can tell you is he borrowed my guitar and played for 2 hours on the stage of that little tiny club without stopping. I mean, without stopping for a second, for anything. And when I finally closed my mouth at the end of it, I realized that, God, I wish I had a tape recorder because it wasn't recorded in any way. But it was more than a guitar player standing on the stage who has a lot of skill with the guitar. It was more than a guitar player standing on the stage with a lot of skill and a lot of spirit. It was a possessed man. It was a man who had no thought about being anywhere else in the universe, but right there doing that. And I don't know, he could have been anywhere. And it was just staggering. It was staggering. Nobody moved in the club. Nobody nobody breathed. And hardly anybody knew who he was yet. So it wasn't because he was a big famous guy. It was because there was this presence who was there. And he was definitely left and right of center at the same time. And what that had to do with his state of mind, I don't know. But it sure affected mine a lot.
You know, there are a lot of artists that have been damaged in some way or another. Like you had mentioned Syd Barrett, you know, you can attribute that to taking too much LSD. Bud Powell, famous jazz pianist, was in a pretty awful accident, I think, and it really exacerbated his mental capacities, and he was much more the notoriety of, right, of his eccentricities after that accident are
his
very
eccentricities,
well documented.
And his, but also his playing got enormously better. He was playing faster, cleaner.
Like with more focus, perhaps?
Like with more focus, perhaps.
Yeah. And then, you know, and he had a, you know, tragic, short life, really, like a lot of these artists. But there is that sort of that martyrdom, you know, aspect of this, too, when you look at folks like Jaco Pastorius or, well, not necessarily Phil Spector. He's just in jail. But like a Jaco Pastorius who had this tragic end to his life. Your stories like Rocky Erickson, I guess this would be the feel-good story, really, of having this sort of almost tragic and ignominious kind of end to his musical life anyway, coming back out of that mental illness.
Right.
So how much of this is really that sort of standing by the roadside and gawking and pointing your finger, and how much of it really is the music itself? I don't think in the case of a Wesley Willis or a Daniel Johnston, it's the music itself.
Well, and I keep thinking about Skip Spence, and I thought he was from Jefferson Airplane, but
Moby Grape.
Yeah, okay. I just know a little bit about him just because he's an example used in some classes sometimes when you're studying. But he was schizophrenic and just sort of, after the 70s, just sort of dropped out of sight and was homeless and off and on for 25 years, a ward of the state of California. And at times he was treated, at times he was untreated. And just very sad, tragic ending. He eventually died of cancer. But at the end of his life, he did manage to record another album and also did some work for the state of California in doing music and music therapy for people with schizophrenia. And so he was just very in and out of his mental illness, particularly after the 70s when he just sort of dropped out of the business and was homeless off and on and just at different times treated and different times untreated.
I can't help but say at this point, and I don't mean in the least bit derogatory about it, but Moby Grape was the only band that I know of that actually released, to Gentleman with Schizophrenic, that actually released two albums at the same time. Hmm. On the same day, at the same moment, released two very different albums by the same band. Interesting.
There's a band, I don't imagine too many people know about them. They're from Argentina, called Reynolds. The two guitar players for the band worked at a home, I guess, for disabled adults, and the singer and drummer has Down syndrome. You know, I always thought they sang in Spanish, but when I met the guys, they were like, oh, he doesn't sing in Spanish. That's his own personal language that he sings. Hmm. And so it's really interesting stuff, but I mean, you know, it, like, to me, there's that level where it's like there's really something wrong with somebody. And then one of the things I think that naturally happens with touring musicians is they fall into drug use, because the way the touring musician lifestyle works is you get up in the morning and you have to drive for a few hours or whatever, and then you just have to stay ready somehow for 14 hours before it's time for you to actually get hopped up and be ready to get on the stage late at night. And then as soon as you get off the stage, you need to be able to fall asleep really quickly. So it just ends up being a cycle of you need to take these drugs, A, to pass the time, but B, to get excited enough to perform on stage, and then to cool down enough after the show to be able to sleep to do it the next day. And that also happens, I hear, in the news reporter industry, which to me is, it's really a crazy idea that these people you watch on the nightly news, that's what's going on behind closed doors.
Wow. This same band I was talking about that I was in, we did a tour where we opened for Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. And we, I don't know how many states we toured, but it was an awful lot of states. It was all on the bus, and it was all very badly routed. So that, well, just for instance, we left New York City, and our opening gig was in Oklahoma City. So that's the way the routing went for this tour. And it was a study in drug abuse, this whole tour. And it was, I only succumbed to it one time. And after succumbing to it, I literally, we encountered two blizzards between New York and Oklahoma City. It took 24 hours to get from New York to Oklahoma City. The peak moment of which was on the West Virginia Turnpike, which most of you know, is two lanes. Mm-hmm. So we were stuck for a good long time. And I found myself counting snowflakes, and I could have sworn to you that I could tell you how many snowflakes had fallen within my view in West Virginia at that time. But on the serious side, before that tour was over, some people that started out being really nice, warm, fuzzy, friendly human beings weren't anymore. They were having a difficult time sticking in there. They were having a difficult time playing their music, much less getting along with the rest of the people. So I'm just in total support of what you're saying about the life that you're forced to lead when you do this is, unless you've got a real handle on it when you start and a handle on yourself, it's going to get you sooner or later.
Yeah, I mean, if you have any degree of any kind of mental problems, I think, it's very unstable, the idea that you wake up a different city every day, you don't even know what day it is any given time, you don't know the date, you don't know the city you're in, if there's anything even slightly off about you, that's just going to be amplified and exaggerated and
written about. Maybe, with any luck.
If you're lucky, yeah. If you're lucky, you get written about for it.
The thing is, sometimes, though, well, oftentimes, though, it's those things that are off that lend themselves to creativity, into art. So it's a
double-edged sword.
Yeah, I mean, there's,
yeah, there is that idea that you can stare down the barrel of that madness and dip into the magic on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And does that really happen?
I think it does.
I think it does too. It has to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to. You have to have it happen, but you have to also be able to come back on the other side, mm-hmm. as you say. A lot of people, they're trying to dip in and they mm-hmm. fall in themselves. Like you were saying with Phil Spector, clearly. I mean, mm-hmm. anybody that saw him wearing the clown wig when he was on trial for murder, I think knows mm-hmm. that he was on the other side at that point.
Or you get to, your Kurt Cobain, Jeff Buckley,
Elliot Smith,
those types,
all the suicides.
They weren't able to come back or to find a way out. But I've seen and known people that were able to do that and come back, and I've seen people that were able to do that and almost not come back and still go on to continue to create things and find a balance between the light and darkness and inside them.
I mean, even the sweet-sounding James Taylor had a period of his life early mm-hmm. on knocking around the zoo is not about the San Diego Zoo, my mm-hmm. friend. It's mm-hmm. about being institutionalized.
Mm-hmm.
And yet here he is, America's sweet-singing, for the older generation and maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Email us what it is at wncw.org. Slipping into darkness here, talking about artists' inner demons and mental illnesses. We look forward to highlighting your comments on our weekend wrap-up of the show Friday morning here on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Brian John Mitchell, Kristen Isgett, and Bob Hinkle. Until next time.